Right. So you're in law school, right? And you think you've got property law down pat. I mean, sale option, the basics.
Yeah, you think you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, you get hit with this case that just flips everything you thought you knew upside down.
Totally throws you for a loop.
Yeah. And that's exactly the kind of case we're going to unpack today.
Absolutely.
It's Delcambre v. Dubois back in 1972 from Louisiana.
That's the one.
It really digs into the nitty-gritty, the nuances of sales with a right of redemption versus option contracts.
And it's not just some obscure case either. This one really highlights the problems courts run into when the contract's language is, well, let's just say, less than crystal clear.
Yeah, not exactly a model of clarity.
No. And that's what we're here to do today. We're going to break down the main arguments in Delcambre. And by the end of this, you'll understand why this distinction between redemption and options, it's a make or break concept for any future lawyer.
So let's set the scene. It's 1963, and we've got Howard Delcambre inheriting a big chunk of land in Louisiana, 4,300 acres, along with his siblings.
Sounds like a pretty sweet deal, right?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But hold on, there's a twist.
Always a catch.
Oh, there's Howard. Howard was drowning in debt, like serious financial trouble. We're talking about $60,000 through judgments and mortgages.
Ouch, that's not good.
Yeah, and the worst part was his creditors, they could actually force a partition of this land he inherited.
Which would be a total mess for
A
everyone.
complete nightmare.
So, what happened?
Well, his siblings, they stepped in to help out. They essentially bought Howard's share of the property.
Smart move.
But here's where things get interesting. At the same time, they signed this counter letter. It's like a separate agreement, basically giving Howard the right to buy back the land down the road.
Okay, so they bought him out but left the door open for him to get back in.
Yeah, that's the idea. But then this is crucial. This counter letter didn't say anything about when Howard had to buy back the property. It was totally open-ended.
No deadline at all.
Nope. And now let's jump ahead 5 years to 1968. Guess what happens?
Don't tell me oil, they struck oil.
Oil is discovered on the land, and now these 4,300 acres, they're worth a whole lot more.
So naturally, Howard wants his land back.
Exactly. He tries to exercise his right to buy it back, but his siblings, they say no dice.
And that's how we end up in court, right?
You go lawsuit.
Time.
Howard goes to court asking for specific performance. Basically wants the court to force his siblings to sell him back the land according to that counter letter. And the trial court, what they actually sided with Howard.
So the first round goes to Howard.
It does. They ordered the siblings to give back the property as soon as Howard pays up the agreed price. But as you might expect, this story doesn't end there.
It rarely does.
The siblings, they appeal the decision, and their argument, this is where it gets really fascinating for us law students. Their argument cuts right to the heart of Louisiana property law. They said, listen, this counter letter, it's not a valid sale with the right of redemption at all. It's actually an option contract, and it's not even enforceable because it doesn't have a time limit.
Interesting. So they're saying because there's no deadline on when Howard can exercise this buyback, it can't be a redemption and it's an invalid option.
Precisely. And their concern was totally valid. They said, without a time limit, this right to buy back, it could hang over the property forever. And that goes against public policy.
Makes sense. You don't want land tied up indefinitely.
Exactly. And that takes us to the big legal crossroads in this case. We have to understand the difference between a sale with a right of redemption and an option contract.
Yeah,
Two different animals.
absolutely. Now, for our listeners who are still wrapping their heads around property law, let's break it down.
Okay, so a sale with the right of redemption that's covered by Louisiana Civil Code Articles 2567 and 2568.
Right, and basically it means the seller, they keep the right to get their property back within a certain time as long as they pay back the purchase price.
Like a safety net for the seller.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Louisiana law has this built-in safety net. If you don't specify a time limit in the agreement, the redemption period automatically defaults to 10 years.
So it's like the law is saying if you didn't set a deadline, we'll give you 10 years.
Exactly.
Now, an option contract that's totally different. It's under Article 2462.
Right, and it's basically a one-sided promise where one party, the one giving the option, they agree to keep their offer open for a specific period of time.
So the person with the option, they can choose to buy the property within that time, but they don't have to.
Exactly. And the key here, the thing that the siblings were really hammering on, is that fixed period. There has to be a deadline.
So back to Delcambre. The big question for the appellate court was that 1963 counter letter a valid sale with the right of redemption, meaning it gets that 10-year grace period? Or was it an option that was doomed from the start because it didn't have a deadline?
Big question with big implications.
And as we said, the trial court, they initially thought it was a legit agreement for repurchase.
Right, but the siblings, they weren't giving up.
No. They took it to the appeals court and kept arguing that missing time limit makes the whole thing unenforceable. Like they were saying, you can't call this an option because there's no deadline, and it can't be a redemption because it doesn't meet the requirements.
And this gets to a core idea in property law, that there should be limits on how much you can encumber a property.
Like you can't just keep it tied up forever.
Exactly. If you let options stay open forever, it creates all sorts of problems for ownership.
It's like a giant question mark hanging over the land.
So what did the appellate court decide in the end, especially after the rehearing?
Well, on rehearing, the court ultimately sided with Howard. They said, yep, this was a sale with the right of redemption. And their reasoning is really interesting. It's a gold mine for law students.
Definitely. So yeah. What was their logic?
Well, first, they really stressed that Louisiana has this automatic 10-year redemption period. If you don't write a deadline into the agreement, boom, the law steps in and gives you 10 years.
Yeah.
And since the counterletter didn't mention any time limit, the court said, okay, 10 years it is.
So the law filled in the gap.
Exactly. But they didn't stop there. The court also looked really closely at what Howard and his siblings intended back in 1963 when they made that agreement. They looked at testimony and other evidence suggesting that everyone involved. The idea was that Howard would have a chance to get the land back if he managed to pay off those debts his siblings had basically covered for him.
So the court was looking beyond just the words on paper. They wanted to get at the heart of what everyone meant to do.
Exactly. And it's like they cared more about the spirit of the agreement than the specific words used. I mean, the counterletter used the phrase granted the right to repurchase, which sounds more like giving someone an option, not like the seller holding onto a right.
That's a good point. And the court actually addressed it head on.
They did.
Yeah. They basically said, look, while those specific words granted versus reserved, they might usually make you think of an option when you look at the big picture, the intention of everyone involved, plus the rules Louisiana already has for redemption, it all points towards a sale with a right of redemption. They leaned heavily on those Louisiana Civil Code articles 2567 and 2568, which talk about the seller's right to take back the property under a redemption agreement.
It's like they said the words might lean one way, but the overall context and the law, they lean another way.
Right.
Now, this wasn't a unanimous decision, though, right? There were dissenting opinions.
Yeah. And those are always important because they show us different ways of looking at the same legal issue.
So what were the dissenting opinions in Delcamber?
Well, Judge Culpepper, he had a strong dissent. He argued that when the counterletter said the siblings granted the right to repurchase, that clearly meant it was a true option contract, not a sale with a built-in right of redemption. He was worried about fairness to the siblings because they had taken on Howard's debts and maybe even made improvements to the property during those years. He said if this was truly a redemption, they should be paid back for all that.
Makes sense. You want to be compensated for those investments.
And he also pointed out this technical detail in Louisiana law. Usually for a sale with redemption, the seller needs to keep possession of the property, which wasn't true for all the land in this case.
So that possession issue adds another layer of complexity.
Yeah, it really highlights the subtle differences between these legal tools.
And wasn't there another dissenting judge?
Yes. Judge Domingueau, he initially agreed that based on how it was written and the words used, the counterletter looked like an option. But when they reviewed the case, he ended up siding with the majority, though his reasoning was a bit different. He admitted that the original language was ambiguous, but ultimately he thought the 10-year default redemption period in the law was a strong enough reason to call it a sale with a right of redemption. He initially put a lot of emphasis on looking at the party's intent based on things like testimony evidence outside of the written document itself to really understand what they had agreed to.
So even among the judges who agreed on the outcome, their reasoning took different paths.
Exactly. And that's important to remember. There's not always one right answer in law.
And this split among the judges, it shows a really fundamental tension in contract law, right? Like, how much do you stick to the exact words of a contract versus trying to figure out and honor what the people who signed it actually meant to do?
Big question, right? And in this case, the fact that Louisiana had this specific rule about the 10-year default period, it played a huge role in how the majority resolved that tension.
Yeah, the law provided a framework for interpreting the agreement.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there who are future lawyers, Delcamber v. Dubois, it's packed with important lessons.
Absolutely. So let's break it down. What are the key takeaways our listeners should really remember?
Well, first and foremost, this case is a screaming example of why you need to be precise and clear when you're writing real estate contracts. If Howard and his siblings had just spelled out exactly what they meant, whether it was a sale with a right to buy back within a specific time or a straight-up option with a clear deadline, they probably could have avoided this whole legal mess altogether. Ambiguity in contracts. It's not just a small mistake. It can lead to years of lawsuits and leave the interpretation of your client's wishes up to the courts.
Yeah, like you're rolling the dice on how a judge is going to interpret things.
And you're adding years of stress and expense for everyone involved.
No one wants that. So lesson one, be crystal clear in your drafting.
Absolutely. What else do we learn from Dilcamber?
Well, I think it shows how important those statutory default rules are in Louisiana, especially that 10-year redemption period. In this case, it acted like a safety net because the agreement itself was fuzzy. But it also reminds us that relying on those default rules is not the best practice.
Right. It's like using a backup parachute. You're glad it's there, but you'd rather not have to use it.
Exactly. If you can clearly define the terms yourself, don't leave it to the default rules to fill in the blanks.
Another crucial takeaway is that the court was willing to look at all that external evidence, the testimony and everything else, to try and understand what the parties really meant, especially since the written agreement was so unclear. That shows us that courts, even though they generally stick to the written word, they're not always stuck with it if there's strong evidence that points to a different shared understanding.
So it's not just about the letter of the law, it's also about the spirit of the agreement.
And finally, we can't forget the public policy side of things. The court's decision was also influenced by this idea that you don't want to put indefinite restrictions on property. That 10-year default rule for redemption periods, it fits in with that policy. It makes sure that land ownership doesn't stay in limbo forever.
It keeps things moving in the real estate world.
And just to quickly recap the core concepts, in a sale with redemption, the seller has the right to buy back the property. With an option contract, the potential buyer has the right but not the obligation to buy within a certain time. And the fact that Dilcamber didn't have that specific time frame, that's what fueled the whole argument about it being an option that couldn't be enforced.
Yeah, it all boiled down to that missing deadline.
So to sum it up, Dilcamber v. Dubois, it's a great example of how contract language, the intentions of the people involved, and the specifics of Louisiana property law all come together. It reminds us that legal analysis, it's not just about reading words on a page. It's about understanding the context, the intent, and the legal principles at play.
It's like putting together a puzzle.
Absolutely. In this case, it's still relevant today for anyone studying or working with real estate law in Louisiana. It shows how crucial it is to be clear in your agreements and to really know how the law works in this area.
Well, this deep dive into Dilcamber v. Dubois has been really eye-opening. It definitely shows how complicated things can get, even with seemingly simple real estate deals.
It does. And it highlights how important it is to not just know the definitions of legal terms, but to also understand how courts actually interpret and apply them in real-world disputes.
So as our listeners continue on their legal journeys, here's something to think about. In what other areas of law might you run into this struggle between sticking to the exact words of a document versus trying to figure out what the parties really intended? And what tools do courts use to deal with those situations? It's a question worth pondering as you explore the world of law.
A question that will come up time and time again. It's been a pleasure joining you for this deep dive into Dilcamber v. Dubois. We hope you've gained some valuable insights into Louisiana property law and the lasting lessons we can learn from this landmark case.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.